The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Since the start of the pandemic, in-person visitations from family, friends, and advocates have been halted at ICE detention centers. But this week, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement announced they'll be phasing back in these visitations. Now, the move is a promising development for ICE detainees and their loved ones, but the fact that it took so long to resume visitations still raises some questions. Because unlike ICE, the federal prison system allowed visitations to resume starting back in October of 2020. For more on this, let's talk with Luis Romero, assistant professor in the Department of Comparative Race and Ethnic Studies at Texas Christian University, where he focuses on immigration enforcement. Luis, thanks for coming on The Takeaway.
Thank you, Melissa.
All right, so this change in ICE policy is taking place more than a year after federal prisons restarted visitations. Why do you think it took so much longer for detention facilities?
I think just like many other issues revolving migrants, migrants are often an afterthought when it comes to, you know, different policies and things that could benefit migrants themselves. When it comes to things like visitation, these aren't necessarily guaranteed even in pre-COVID times. So having things like medical justifications for not reinstating visitation was something that took a lot longer in the detention context. And we can see this in other migration policies, such as Title 42, in which public health justifications are used to sort of use COVID to justify having things like visitation for migrants.
The very language that we use, for example, detention centers, we've just had a conversation around federal prisons. We call ICE-run facilities detention centers. How does this potentially obscure who's being held and the circumstances of that detention?
Detention is civil in nature. It's not punitive as we think of incarceration or prisons. Migrants are detained because they're awaiting the processing of their immigration case, which again is civil in nature. And so I think that really obscures the fact that many migrants who are detained are seeking asylum or have not committed any crimes or been, indicted or charged with anything, really, thinking of migrants in detention as being in these spaces that I think are very much akin to prison. It's very easy for people to think of them as criminals or as people who are being punished, but that's not really the purpose of detention.
What are the conditions like, though? Are the conditions prison-like, or are they more like the kinds of conditions we might expect if you use the language of people who are seeking asylum, who are simply awaiting their cases being heard?
So in many cases, conditions are prison-like. Part of this has to do with the fact that private prison companies are in charge and operate and own many of the facilities where migrants are being detained. So in many cases, literal former prisons that were once used to hold incarcerated populations were then converted into detention facilities. And so the spaces itself might look slightly different than what they did during their prison days. But in terms of some of the conditions inside, whether that's people all wearing, similar uniforms, their lives being very routinized, being watched and surveilled, not having, say in what times they get to eat, or just the fact that they can't leave itself, I think underscores how many similarities there are between these detention sites and prisons.
So explain why these visitations are important, especially given how you've been walking us through the realities that migrants are facing.
Yeah, so there's several reasons why these visitations and visitation groups as well are important. Visitors provide emotional support for migrants in detention that are really living under a cloud of uncertainty. Visitation also provides migrants with connections to resources, being informed on different advocacy groups in the area, or being told about resources like pro bono lawyers. Migrants in detention don't have the right to an attorney, so being able to have access to any type of advocates becomes very critical. Visitation and visitation groups also provide a form of accountability, because being able to know what's going on, whether that is abuses or whether it's any traumas that might be occurring inside of these facilities, having advocates to tell your story or to connect you with the proper groups or resources to help migrants navigate that is also an important piece of all of this.
Now, you make this point about the ways that many of us experience some sense of isolation in the context of the pandemic and the stay-at-home orders and quarantine. And obviously, the use of video calls and technology was a big part of mitigating some of that. Have people in ICE detention had access to that kind of technology and video calls during the pandemic?
Yes, they have had access to video calls, although I know that it does vary from facility to facility, but as we know, that's not the best substitute for, you know, the in-person visitations and contact and communication with other people. Besides that, the other issue that oftentimes comes up with this is people just feeling like they're being surveilled. As we know with our technologies, all of that is subject to having someone listen in on it. Not to say that in-person visitations are also not privy to that, but having sort of the technological eye watch and hear what you're saying is also something that I know migrants have reported as being self-conscious about and really concerned about.
Obviously, this 2 years of limitations on visitation means that it was certainly happening during the Trump administration, but then also largely during the Biden administration. How would you compare the situation in ICE facilities under President Biden and President Trump as a kind of general matter?
Obviously, the difference between Trump and Biden are that, you know, Biden is not using the same inflammatory, xenophobic, you know, racist language around migrants and having a lot of his administration work towards punishing and deterring migrants from entering the U.S. But at the same time, that is a low bar and one that I don't think, you know, we should necessarily use to compare Biden and his sort of work around detention and migrants in general. So on the one hand, there have been some improvements compared to Trump. Biden has increased the number of people who are able to undertake or be part of alternatives to detention, where those are GPS monitoring or other types of check-ins. He's obviously tried to undo Title 42 in some ways, even though that's still pending. But the fact that visitation has taken so long to being reinstated and other measures such as ending the detention of asylum seekers, for example, hasn't happened. I think those are things that many advocates and loved ones of migrants have been disappointed regarding Biden and his work around migrants.
Luis Romero, assistant professor at Texas Christian University. Professor Romero, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.